Get ready to whiten those knuckles and hold fast as we talk the most dangerous, daring, and epic sea stories ever told with professional and volunteer ocean rescuers.
Whether lifeguards rushing into the waves from their towers, police and fireboats pulling victims from beyond the surf line, or bystanders taking action to save another, those who go down to the sea enter the most challenging and dangerous environment on Earth.
Only here will you hear their stories and the lessons gained through their experience. I'm your host, Phil.
And I'm Bill.
And we welcome you aboard They Had to Go Out podcast. Before we dive into this episode, we need to provide a disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the individuals involved and are not to be construed as official or reflecting the views of any government agency or military service. This podcast is an independent effort with no government association. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of They Had to Go Out podcast, but a new episode of an entirely new series that we're running called They Had to Go Out Beach Rescue. We recently partnered with the Association for Rescue at Sea that awards or issues awards for heroism for all manner of ocean rescue teams, and not limited to the Coast Guard, not limited to government agencies. They even go out to cruise ships and a ton of international volunteer organizations. So very happy to partner with them, get access to a whole nother group of ocean lifesavers. Today, you know, our guinea pig is a close friend of Bill's. I think they went to high school with each other. So
absolutely,
I'm going to let him hit the intro on it.
Yeah, we'll do that. Hey, everybody, welcome. Normally, my tagline is if this is your first time listening, but there's a guarantee it's your first time listening because it's our first time doing this. Hopefully you guys like it. We're going to try and keep going with this. Who we got on the line today? This is the most stoked I've been for an episode. It's awesome. Like, come full circle. I've known this guy for probably 30 years. We did go to high school together. I got Mr. Jason Conyar. He's a sergeant with the Ocean City Beach Patrol. Been with the Beach Patrol for 20 years. Started out as a surf rescue technician. I get that right, Jace? As the title? All right. Yeah. Born and raised in New London, Connecticut. So we got a little Coast Guard connection there. Your dad was a welder, right? Electric Boat. Worked for Electric Boat, building subs up there. When he was 4 years old, moved to Dover, Pennsylvania. Graduated Dover High School. That's how we know each other. First lifeguard job was the summer of 1995. We actually took the American Red Cross lifeguard course together. It was a recert for me. It was his first time. Worked at the Winfield Club in Dallastown, Pennsylvania.
That's where it came from, man. I was wondering, I'm like, dude, all these guys moving from the coast to inland Pennsylvania, like, what happened? But there we go. We just got it. All right. Fair.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that pool's no longer there. That's a field. Jason and I were just talking about that. Moving on to what you guys are interested in, though. So, 98, he went to Ocean City, Maryland. He took the test that they give everybody for prospective lifeguards. Was unsuccessful that year. That would have been for the 99 season. Came back in, dropped the phone. Super unprofessional.
That's all right.
Came back in.
That's why I bought you. That's why I bought you the thing. Go, start that last part again, man, and I'll edit it out. That was badass.
That was awesome. At least I caught it.
He did.
So, 1998, he went to Ocean City, Maryland, and took the test that they give to prospective lifeguards. Was unsuccessful that year. Came back in 99, successfully passed the test, which meant that in 2000, he started with the Beach Patrol and has been with them ever since. Just hit his 20-year mark this year. So getting to be an old guy now, huh? Remember, we were just young pups. Father Time remains undefeated, but we're still a little ahead of him.
Yeah.
So, Jason, welcome, man. This is awesome. I'm excited to have you. It's good to see you. We don't see each other very often anymore. It's cool to at least see you this way. And with that, our question, as always, is what's your most dangerous, daring, or epic sea story or stories?
I just want to start back where you were talking about my unsuccessful pass. You know, that's tough, man. There's a lot of us that we try and try and try until we actually make it. One of my fellow sergeants, he took the test 8 times until he passed.
Man, dedication.
He's been on the patrol for 35 years now, I believe. Is he just hit a pretty big mark too?
What's the usual pass rate on that? Like, how many people fail on average? What's that?
50%.
Okay, so
right around 50%. So half the battle is just getting them to show up. You know, like, we have a registration online. They pre-register. Mm-hmm. Like, if 40 people pre-register, we'll get 20 people show up, and then from that 20 people, we'll get 10 to pass.
Yeah.
You know, okay. So it's half each time. So it's been a challenge over the years to get pretty good quality athletes to come out and pass our test.
How many do you need to, like, keep it filled a year?
We usually set up 2 rookie academies. And with our 2 rookie academies, we have, I'll say, about 30 in each, so about 60 a year. Okay. As you can imagine, our typical guards are between the ages of, like, 17 and 22. They hit that right. at 22, 23 mark. They graduate. They got to go get a real job.
Yeah.
So then, you know, it's a cycle. So our turnover is – it's always about the same. I mean, we do have a pretty good return rate. But
right.
it's that 22, 23-year-old mark where it's like, man, they don't know what to do with themselves.
Yeah.
You know, and I fell into that myself, you know, hitting that mark. And it was like, man, what am I going to do? But the year that I failed, right, so you know, Bill, because I was never a swimmer. During swim season, I was a basketball player. So, you know, but yep. I considered myself a pretty good athlete. I was a pool guard for 5 years. And then what ended up happening was I went down for senior week. So my senior week was in 1998. And after I passed, senior week, and I got down there, I was like, man, I've been a pool guard. I looked up at those lifeguards. I was like, I could do this job. You know, I could totally see myself doing this job. So at the end of that summer in August, I tried out. And I swam, and I never broke stroke because that's one of our things. You got to do the front crawl, the freestyle. Yeah. You never break stroke. It's a 500. And if you've ever been to Ocean City, Maryland, it's the inlet rock pile. Usually we let you go with the current. So whichever way the longshore current's going. And longshore current that day was going typically south to north. So it was the rock pile to the pier and then in. And we give you 10 minutes to do it. Well, I never broke stroke, but I was going out to sea, man. I just kept going. Like, I'll never forget it because the guy that was paddling next to me, he was a big 12-foot paddleboard. And he's paddling next to me, and he kept screaming at me. And I couldn't – during the swim, I didn't know what he was saying. I was just right. like, what are you saying? And I get out of the water, and he's like, you didn't hear me, man. I was like, well, you told me not to break stroke. I wasn't going to break stroke.
Right?
Like, yep, you're going the wrong way. You're going the wrong way. Well, I set up a 500, and I bet I swam like a 650 that awesome. Day, you know. But, boy, was I pissed. You know, I was so upset. I went back to so after that experience working with you, you know, my first year as a lifeguard, I ended up going to the York City pool, you know, Fenway
yeah.
Park.
Yeah, so, which isn't there anymore either.
Right. Yeah. That was a big pool, a big city pool. And I remember going back to that at the age of like 19, and I was so mad. I was like, this is not me. Like, I should be down at the beach right now. So then the following year I tried out, and after the run and the swim, there was only 2 people left, and it was me and a girl, and the girl quit as we were doing ins and outs. And then for the rest of the test, I went through the rest of the test all by myself.
Score. And killed it.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was pretty cool. So, yeah, it took me one extra time, but yeah, that was a challenging beat.
You had a navigation issue. It wasn't a fitness issue. It was a navigation issue.
To this day, I still zigzag through that ocean. You know, I feel like I've gotten a little bit better. You know, I could knock out that test in about 7 minutes right now. 7:30 is usually my average. So on a good current, you know, you get a good current, you hear about guys that are knocking like below 5. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, that's
– come on, you know.
That ain't no joke swimming open water like that.
No, it's like riding a bike though. You know, you get a little bit better. I learned how to swim, you know, counting every third, every 3 strokes count to the opposite side, keeps you a little bit more straight, but yeah.
I like how you say, like, you get a little faster, but like, man, to get 5 minutes fast, you got to be moving, dude. You got to be a swimmer. You're moving.
Yeah. I mean, that's impressive. Because that's hard to do. Swimming a 500 in a pool in 5 minutes is you're pretty good at it.
our offsite tests a lot of times in the off season this time of year, like we do a pool test and we'll get a good swimmer that's a pool swimmer. You know, he's a high school kid or a college kid that swims for his high school or college, and they're doing the flip turn off the wall, and you know, they look good in the water, and then they get in the ocean and their times are completely different.
Yeah.
Water's completely different.
Yeah.
So it's 100% different. Even a little bit of chop, man, your life's so different.
Oh, so different. You know, especially when that that white water's pumping and you don't know, you know, you look,
you don't know where you are.
Yeah, you don't even know where the pier is. Yep. You know, a lot of times we all tell guards, you gotta make sure you look up to know where that pier is, you know, where your target is.
You learned that lesson day one, man. Right? You gotta look up.
Oh man.
That's good. Yeah. Well, what's Ocean City like? What's it like out there? For anybody that hasn't been, I mean, I've seen it, but like anybody that's never been to Ocean City, and what kind of area do you guys cover? How far out? That kind of thing.
Yeah. Ocean City, we say it's about 10 miles, and it goes from the South Rock on the very south end. There's a big inlet there that breaks between Assateague State Park. And then, you know, where all the boats go in and out, Coast Guard goes in and out through the inlet. And then our side of it starts, we call it the South Rock, is the jetty, big rock pile. And then we go for about 10 miles up until you hit Fenwick, Delaware. So we cover a really large section of the beach. Like compared to some of the other beach patrols on the East Coast, we are one of the biggest patrols because we have so much beach.
Yeah.
If you look at some of the Delaware beach patrols, you know, they're covering like a half a mile. You know, they got they might have five stands where, you know, at our full capacity, say July 4th weekend, we got 97 stands out there. So, yeah, we're a pretty big patrol. So out of those 97 stands.
Hey, you can't, by the way, you can't compare yourself to Delaware when you're trying to look bigger because, I mean, Delaware is already like, I don't even know how big the state is. You know, I'm just kidding, man.
No, but Delaware, you know, like they got multiple and they got private beaches too.
Oh, they do.
So they got all small little beach patrols the whole way up through.
Yeah.
You know, and it isn't.
You guys basically are the Eastern Shore of Maryland. Like everything that's not like National Park or State Park is pretty much you guys, right?
Anytime we go to competitions, you know, it's like Delaware versus Ocean City, Maryland.
Right. Like, yeah.
Different Delaware beach patrols versus Maryland.
Yeah.
So when we show up, like one of our biggest competitions every year is Rehoboth Olympics. And when we go up to the Rehoboth Olympics, we wear our Maryland flag, boy.
Yeah. Heck yeah. Nice.
So that's a big one. But for the Mid-Atlantic region, yeah, we are definitely one of the biggest ones. You know, if you break us down, the way that we kind of cover it is we have four areas. We say that you have the south area. In the south area, you have four crews. So each crew consists of about five stands. So our five stands, the middle person is the first area supervisor. We call him the crew chief. So we got our SRTs, our surf rescue technicians. Then we got our crew chiefs, you know, each crew. You know, we have 18 crews in Ocean City. So the first four, you know, or the south, then we have the middle south, they have about four, you know, the middle north, we have five, and then the north end, they also have five. And each area is kind of unique.
Yeah.
You know, in the south end, obviously you have a bit much bigger, you know, population of people. In the middle south is where a lot of our rip currents tend to occur. Like we have a lot of big rips that are pretty permanent in the 20s and in the 30s, you know, so that's always a, you know, big place for people that really want to make a lot of rescues.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And I hang my hat that that's kind of where I'm from.
Nice.
You know, like I was in crew 7 for many years. And then I was a crew 6 crew chief. Once I first got promoted to the crew chief level, you know, I was a crew 6 crew chief for many years until I became a sergeant. And now I'm the sergeant of the Middle North area. So I've been doing that now as an area supervisor for the last 8 years.
What do you get to do? Do you get to like just cruise around on ATV or what? Where do they, how do they, yeah, heck yeah. I knew that was the answer, man. That's good. Yeah, heck yeah. Earned it. You earned it.
Yeah. So each area has like our little substations, you know, like in the south end, they come straight out of our headquarters, which is downtown. In the middle south, they come out at the end of the boardwalk. There's 27th Street substation. The middle north guys, me and my partner, we come out of 65th Street, the public safety building. Oh, that's where our, and we're actually getting a brand new one right now.
Yeah.
Building it. You know, that's awesome. A while, double, you know, and, you know, we call it Havana.
Yeah, nice.
It sounds like a Coast Guard thing. Yeah, we're working out of a double wide for about a decade. But.
Yeah. So now we're part of the public safety building. They put an addition on it. We're calling it the yard.
Yeah, the yard. I like it.
Yeah, so yeah, I pull my four-wheeler out of there every day, and I go. My area now is right around the 50th Street area to about the Clarion, which is about like 100th Street.
Yeah.
So our area is the biggest area.
So 50 blocks, roughly.
Yeah. So it's pretty big area. We got five crews. We got five great crew chiefs. You know, they've been around for a while. They know the area just as well as us sergeants that have been there. So we got a good group going right now. Cool. We're looking at promotions this weekend, you know, on Sunday, obviously with everything going on, we're doing it, you know, through Zoom, but we don't have any spots. I think we might have one spot. I think crew 13. So we got crews 9 through 13. I think 13's open, but I think we're looking at trying to promote a guy that was already there. You know, he had to go park. We're trying to bring him.
Nice.
Get the band back together. Yeah,
Jason, what's the schedule like? Like when you're, you know, like when you're the SRT, like how many days are you on? How many days are you off? Like during the week, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So we, our SRTs, they're working 5.5 days. And it's kind of like the half day. It's not really a half day. Like we say you're on the stand from 10 to 5:30. Right. So 10 to 5:30. So really you're getting there to make sure that you're set up. You know, you get there like 9:30 to go through your routine of setting up your stand, depending upon the tides and where you're going to set up for the day. A half day, instead of sitting in the stand all day, you're the lunch rover. So again, if you got five stands in your crew, you report to the crew chief. The crew chief might send you to the south end. You give everyone a 20-minute workout break. You go through, give everyone a half an hour lunch break, and then you give everyone a 20-minute workout break. You're done right around 2:30. So you're half
day. That ain't a half day.
But yeah, and then us sergeants, we work 5 full days. We have off 2 days. Yep. And our hours are about 9 to 6. So we just overlap a little bit. Yeah. Recently, they've been doing these morning patrols and afternoon patrols. So they like us to get out there before we're even up in our stands to try to be there at like 8 in the morning. And then what ends up happening is we're there until like 8 o'clock at night. So 12 hours throughout the day. And again, we're not trying to be too visible out there on our ATVs for the 2 hours before and 2 hours after. But we've ran into certain situations where, you know, you go off duty at 5:30, 6 o'clock, they're getting 911 calls and sending out paramedics that,
dude, it's every job like ours, man. Like you got it. Like as soon as it's time to go, right? You start packing it up. Yeah. Boom. That's when it hits the fan without fail.
When I remember being a kid, like going to Ocean City, you didn't go to the beach until like 5:30, 6 o'clock, because that was when the lifeguards left and you could do dumb stuff.
Yeah, right.
Like, well, that, you know?
Yeah. A lot of times I feel like I'm the no fun police.
Right.
Unfortunately, we're the ones involved, you know, trying to enforce those.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Yeah. So, yeah, you see that a lot of times. Like, the kids want to do skimboarding or something. We don't allow people to skimboard from 10 to 5:30, and they'll do it early morning. And it's kind of hard because the ordinance says 10 to 5:30, and we're out there before 10. And then we got to kind of let them skimboard. But then, you know, you're hearing about someone sliding, falling off a skimboard because they go to Sensations, rip off that plastic. They've never done it before. You know, they're spraying the ankle or whatever. Yeah. So,
I mean, it's the same thing we see with people who never really had any boat experience, and they go rent a boat and they're going to go fishing that day. It's same story, right? People just don't have the experience, but they're on vacation and they want to have fun.
Dude, the same thing for police and fire, man. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter when you do the shift change outs or whatever. It doesn't matter, man. If it was 15 minutes before it's off time, like, it's coming. Just face it. You know, you're going to stay there for a
while.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Most memorable rescues were those rescues that happened right at like 9:30 as you're walking over that dune. And then, you know, you're not even out there set up. You're not even thinking about it yet. First time you look at that ocean, it's like, oh, man, there's someone already.
Yeah, already, man. I just got here. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a perfect segue into the story.
Though. Yeah, man, segue. I liked it.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, end of the day, I'll never forget. I was I was an SRT, surf rescue technician, and it's 5:25. And 5:25 every day, we stand up and clear the water to make sure everyone can get out of the water safely. It's just one of our policies that we've been doing for as long as I've been on the patrol. It goes back further than me. But it's 5:25. I stand up. I'm blowing. Come on out of the water. Come on out of the water. And for whatever reason, this guy wasn't making it. And I thought, is he being a jerk? Is he trying to, like, test me? You know, because we get that all the time, too. And he's not, you know, he's just struggling. And I don't see a visible rip. You know, like, I've been doing it for a couple of years. I know how to easily identify a rip now. And I just, this guy just, I don't know. He's just struggling. So I'm like, man, and I'm hesitating. I'm thinking, do I really want to take off right now or not? So I blow my two whistles, a double whistle. I'm taking off, and I jump in, and I grab a hold of this guy. And, I mean, I'm going out, and I'm going through, like, two or three sets of waves to get to him. I mean, he was out pretty far, you know, beyond chest deep. So once you get it out there, and I'm dolphin diving through the waves, and I get out where I'm taking maybe about 10 strokes, I get out to the guy, and I'm like, have you heard me? Here, the guy was deaf. And he had no clue what was going on.
Man.
Oh, man.
Yep.
And I just felt like – I felt like an – I don't know how much I can swear on this show.
Yeah.
I just felt so bad. Like, but, you know, I pulled him in, and I tried to explain to him. And, you know, one of his family members came over, and she was able to sign. And, you know, he was like, hey, you're doing your job. And, yeah, that was one where it was like – you know, later on, I was talking to my covering guards, because anytime, you know, one person goes in for a rescue, I was talking about blowing two whistles. Our neighboring guards, they blow one whistle. There's always a backup system. You're never by yourself,
right?
You know, with our patrol. So although you sit by yourself, you're never by yourself. You know, like, that's one other thing that we kind of, like, right, brag about Ocean City Beach Patrol is, like, you're not sitting with someone, you know, like, it's your beach, you know, yeah, take care of your beach.
Right.
So but you always have backup. So we had, the backup was coming, and, you know, they were kind of dogging me after work, because some of them were my roommates at the time. They were like, man, you went out and saved a deaf guy. It was like, you know, what it is. But yeah, that was one of them.
I know the feeling, man. I've had it happen before too. Just the same kind of thing. Like, and then you get back and you don't know whether to feel stupid or to feel like, man, at least I tried, right? But people never let you live it down, ever. Yeah, I know it. That's good.
Now, one of the probably the biggest ones, I was in crew 7, so I was in an area where there was pretty big rips, and it was kind of like a dark day, you know. The surf was definitely choppy. There was pop-up rips, you know, just flashing open. They would open up and then they would close, and then, you know, you would try to warn someone, stay out of this rip right here, and then you would tell them to go north and direct them to the north side of the rip. And then that's where another rip would open up over there. Yeah, so it was nowhere in the ocean that day that really was safe. But it was a nice day. You know, so it wasn't – it was choppy because there was a storm the night before, you know.
Okay.
And so it was a nice day, but the ocean was angry.
Yeah.
You know, the ocean was still pretty mean. So these rips are flashing open. Our trough, it was during like a mid-tide. So the high tide, the water was, you know, heading back out now as it becoming low tide. So the water's going out naturally anyway. So these troughs, you know, where the water was pretty deep, now they need to make their way out. And they're just breaking through the sandbars left and right and just popping open. And we had a few rescues here and there, but for whatever reason, I remember I was sitting 41st Street. I was on 41, and my crew chief, the crew chief of crew 7 was on 39. And one popped open right in between us, you know, just a little bit south of me, about probably 40 and a half. Ever since they started doing the beach replenishment, there used to be a rock pile. Well, I mean, it's still there, but there's a rock pile there. And that rock pile blew open. And I feel like, you know, I remember kind of turning my head, seeing these two guys in this rip. And it wasn't, I don't know, like 2 or 3 seconds until you could visibly see their bodies just heading straight out, you know. And I looked south to 39th Street to see what my crew chief was going to do. He blew one whistle of prevention. I was like, we're going. So I blew two whistles first. And I jump down and I take off. And he jumps down. He's not coming down to cover. He's going in with me. Like, we know we're both going in. And I'd try to jump in, go through the trough, get to the sandbar, and then come over to the south end to the rip where he ran up and he just jumped straight in the rip.
Nice. That's one way to get out.
Oh, my God. Man. So I took off maybe a couple seconds before him, but he got to the victims before I did because he was in the rip.
Yeah.
Where I was like, right. Off and all the white water and stuff. And we get out there, and it's two guys, and they're older guys. It was a father son. We found out later, but the older guy, I would say he's probably in his, you know, 60s. The son was probably in his like late 30s, and the two of them, they were exhausted. You know, and the father, he was starting to panic, and the son, he was trying to, you know, obviously help his dad. Dad was kind of, you know, jumping on top of the son. I mean, it was just a mess. So since my crew chief, he got to him before I did, he took the father. You know, we were always taught, like, you take whoever is in the most need. Mm-hmm. You know, whoever's in the most need, you grab first. And if you can't determine that, you go for the furthest one out, you know. But he knew right away that the father was the one in the most need. So he grabs the father. So I grab the son. And the father starts panicking, and he's not holding on to the buoy. You know, we're like, you know, here, grab this rail, grab this rail. You know, we're trying to – he's Matt Postel is my crew at the time. He's swimming them in, and the guy is going in and out of consciousness, you know, as we're trying to swim them in. So he's letting go of the buoy. He's letting go of the buoy. So Postel decides to cross-chest him by putting the buoy up underneath his chest. You know, get up underneath his arms, grab a hold of the rail, the buoy starts backing him out. I'm behind the father, and I'm pushing the father's feet, trying to go, and the son's on my buoy behind me. And this rip, we just couldn't get out of it. Like, it didn't matter. Like, longshore current that day, it was right after a nor'easter, so it's going north to south. So we're heading south to try to get out of the rip before coming into shore. And we're just not getting out of it. I felt like it was as wide as probably one of our city blocks. And okay. I just felt like we're never going to get out of this thing. And we're swimming. And I could look to shore and see all the backup and everyone standing up on stands and water. They're clearing the water, you know, trying to, you know, just make sure that there's nothing else that's going to happen while we're trying to make this rescue. And I'm pushing. And the sun climbed the buoy on me. And, you know, we teach that, and it's rare that it happens. And the son, he's climbing the rope. And I don't know it because I'm keeping my eyes forward. The son climbs the rope, jumps on my back. You know, I hit the pressure points, and I duck down because a victim never wants to go underwater. And I duck down, and I spin him around and threw him off of me. And I took the leash off, and I threw the leash at the kid, at the son. I was like, the best way. And I just remember screaming at him and just being like, the best way you can help right now. Because he was like, we got to get my dad in. I was like, the best way you can help right now is by just kicking. That's all you can do. Hold on to that buoy, kick. Now, are you going to help me or not? You know, and he calmed down and he grabbed the rails and I got the leash back on and he kicked and we were kicking and we were pushing and we got him to shore. And by the time we finally got him to the shore, which felt like an eternity, it might have only been like 3 minutes or so, but paramedics were already waiting on shore, waiting for us. And as soon as we hit shore, you know, we drug them out. You know, two people like basket. You know, and we're getting them up the dry sand and we lay him down. And you know, we're checking his vitals to see like if he's conscious or not. And you know, we couldn't really determine. You know, like he had a heartbeat, but we couldn't really tell if he was breathing at one point. So we started actually doing some rescue breaths on him, and boom, right away his eyes opened up. He popped awake. It was surreal. It was the biggest rescue at that time that I ever had. I think I was probably like a third year guard, so I think that was the summer of 2003. You know, you have little rescues that where you go grab a kid, you know, or something, and you bring them in. But that one was the first one where I was like, man, we were close. You know, we were close to, you know, really seeing something that, you know, everyone wants to be a lifeguard because, you know, they see us just getting tan on the beach or like, you know, the Baywatch music or whatever. But, you know, after you do it for a couple of years, you start seeing some things. And, you know, that was the first one where I was like, wow, that was real. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's where it just stuck. I was like, man, I love that.
And yeah, man, you can't that, you can't get rid of that feeling, right? Like once you have it, yeah, it just sticks with you.
And then that day, later that day, so the paramedics took him off to our local hospital, Atlanta General Hospital, AGH, and he got cleared. You know, he had no water in his lungs or anything, they said. So he came back. It was either that evening or the very next morning. And, you know, the family was so sincere. And, you know, to this day, I still have this big poster that they made for me and Matt and some of the other guards that were involved in that rescue. And it's like, when you save the life of whatever the guy's name is, I don't know off the top of my head, but then on this side, it was like all the family members. It was like, you saved my dad. You saved my son. You saved my grandfather. You saved my, it was all right. The rest of the family. And, I mean, that's something I cherish.
Yeah, that's know. Awesome, man. What a gift, sure. Right? Yeah.
How far south did you guys end up having to go? Like, do you remember where you actually got him out of the water? You said you went into, like, he was probably, well, like 40th Street, so.
Yeah, we went in right around 40 and a half, 40th Street. I think we were down in front of the Coconuts by the time we actually got him out, down on 37th Street, you know.
Okay, so like three, four blocks you end up.
Yeah. And I swear to you, it felt like the rip was drifting with us, you know. Right. We couldn't break the grip of the rip because it was like going with us. It was following us, you know, because
We've got a lot more of this episode to go, and we'll get right back to it after this short ad from our sponsor.
Sometimes that's just how it happens. You can't fight Mother Nature. Right. So there's been times where, you know, trying to break that grip, the South rocks. You know, for one day, random day, you know, if you're scheduled as an unassigned, you know, we call it you're unassigned that day. You're not going to be in your crew. You might be somewhere else. Well, they put me on the South Rocks, which is nuts. Like, I'm a Middle South guy. You know, what are you doing putting me on the South Rocks? You know, so in our training, we talk about, you know, your imaginary line of prevention, depending upon the way the longshore current's going. And, you know, you might have to adjust it depending on how fast that current's moving. And I'm sitting in the rock pile, man. Like, there's no one to the south of me. You know, like, right. if someone goes into the inlet, like, it's bad news, man. Coast Guard's coming.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's our policy. Like, if people go into the inlet, you're going in there too. And actually, you're going to bring in another person because one person has the victim. The other person has the buoy up over the head swinging it saying, hey, Coast Guard, don't run me over.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, this day, and it's kind of embarrassing. Like, you might get teased if the Coast Guard has to come get you, you know, like that's
understandable. Right.
So this one day I'm sitting South Rock and it's kind of towards the end of the day. And this one kid, he's on a bodyboard. And he's out beyond the rock pile, so he's 150, 200 yards offshore, and he's drifting towards the inlet. And I'm like, man, really, this is going to go down like this? You know,
today's
like,
the day.
Today's the day. Yeah. Here we go. Like, my training from years ago, because I don't sit the south rock pile, but that imaginary line of prevention, I have it. You know, I have a jack towards the north. I'm looking out towards like almost middle inlet between the rock pile and the pier. And the kid's just drifting, and I'm standing up, and I'm preventing, and I'm trying to push him, you know, to just come straight in because he's not going to fight the current. So I'm like, come on in, kid. Come on in, kid. His mom or dad or whatever, they're coming towards the lifeguard stand. Everyone's standing up, like, eyes on me. What is the lifeguard going to do? It's like, I'm not waiting around. I'm going to cut this kid off. So I blow my two whistles. I jump in the rip right at the rock pile because, that's a fixed rip. And I go flying out. And I cut the kid off before we hit the rock pile, so I don't have to worry about, like, impact zone or anything like that, like turning him around. But I have him, and I'm like, hey, man, you've been doing a great job staying on the flotation device. I want you to stay on your bodyboard. Can you also hold on to the crown of the buoy, the end of the buoy? Mm-hmm. And he's fine. He's chill as can be. Like, he doesn't think anything else. He never panicked. He never jumped off the board. But that kid was going to go right into the inlet. And because it was an outgoing tide, as soon as he hit that inlet, he was going to be out to the quarter mile buoy, man.
Oh, yeah, right. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pushed out real quick. So he was getting sucked in. And it was one of those things that it's like, man, I am not going to be that guard that gets made fun of for Coast Guard pick. Like, so I'm swimming towards the pier. I'm swimming towards the pier, swimming towards it. And I got an anchor on behind me because this kid's not jumping off his board. He's not helping at all.
He's not kicking at all. He's just like along for the ride.
Yeah, he wasn't the smallest kid either.
Right.
Well, that was probably my longest rescue. You know, like
Oh,
I
really?
wasn't going. What's the saying? It was like, you're like a hamster in a wheel. You know, like I
Right.
wasn't going. And I was kicking and swimming and kicking and swimming, and finally I broke out and I came to shore. I felt like I was out there probably 6 or 7 minutes, like I was swimming the test.
Yeah, crazy.
There's no one before us. You know, like you might say that they're the first responder, but we're first.
Right.
Right. They're not going in the water to get them out.
And a lot of times we start CPR before they're on scene. You know, like they might have a 2 or 3 minute response time, or if the city's really popping off and they're busy, we're out there by ourselves for a while before the paramedics show up. So, this high idea nowadays with this high performance CPR, back then it was, well, you have to do 30 compressions and you have to do 2 breaths. Man, all those breaths didn't go in. Maybe I got to reach tilt the head or something. And, now it's like, whatever, man. We know now, compressions are the most important, and we don't stop. You know, like it's 30, it's not 30 to 2. It's you're doing compressions
Right.
and you're doing ventilations. With us being on the quads, we have the AEDs on our four-wheelers. That's my biggest thing now as an area supervisor. I'm driving around with Stop the Bleed. You heard
Yep,
those
stop the
things?
bleed for sure, yeah. Yeah, because Ocean City's got gray whites, right? Is that up there too? Yeah, dude. Yeah. I don't screw around with gray whites, bro. You can have all those 500 meter swims you want up there.
Big Bertha.
Yeah.
Big Bertha. She comes to our bay every once in a
Do you guys
while.
track it like on the board at work, like in the yeah, in the
Oh,
bungalow or whatever?
really? One year we had I was part of I was driving by. It was just perfect timing because it wasn't all I wasn't called to the scene. I was there. I was right there. I was driving by. I saw a guard blow 2 whistles take off. So I cruise up to a stand to cover the stand while he's in the re making the rescue. And it looked like it was a passive victim out on the water, just face down. I was like, oh my gosh, like what's going on? And it was a flat day. There was nothing. It was Lake Atlantic. It was glassy. It was a beautiful day. And here it was a girl that had epilepsy. She had a seizure in the water.
Oh, gosh.
And what really frustrated me about that day was this guy, he was sitting down at the water's edge, in a beach chair, and he saw it, and he stood up and started screaming. And after it was all said and done, the guard went out, grabbed the girl, brought her in, paramedics took her off. Everything was fine. God, we resuscitated her, brought her back. Later on, this guy wanted to come up to me because he noticed that I was probably like a boss, like an area
Right.
supervisor. I was accountable. And he wanted to start complaining about the guard and how, he didn't respond fast enough. And, it was the complaint was just bogus. It was frustrating because it was like it was a perfectly calm day. There's no rips, there's nothing. And I don't care how much your head's on a swivel. We say like you're supposed to look south and it should take you 10 seconds to scan and look north and you see your neighbor's there. You're scanning the water. Like he was scanning. I drove by. I saw him. Like he might not have seen it. It was a calm day until he got out there. But that guy, he saw it because he was on the water's edge, closer to the girl, right there. And he's just complaining and complaining to me. And I'm getting frustrated because I'm backing my guy up. He's like, I'm sorry, sir, but I saw what I saw. And I listen. I hear you, but it just went back and forth for a while. And finally, I just pulled out, I got a clipboard. I pulled out my clipboard. I was like, here's my volunteer, witness statement. If you want to make a complaint, here's my clipboard. Here's a pen. Start filling it out. Like I had to walk away from the guy.
Right.
I walk away from the guy, and this other guy from the back of the beach, he stands up from his chair. He comes walking over and he's like, are you having a problem with that guy down there? I explained to him. I was like, yeah, he's actually complaining about what just happened here. He's like, man, I was going to actually tell you the exact opposite. I was going to tell you that that guard did a fantastic job. And I forget what kind of like special operations, what military that guy was from. Like he started telling me, he's like, I've done this and I've done that. And I got to tell you, I'm so impressed with your organization. I was like, you stay right here, sir. I'm going to get you a witness.
Yeah,
sir.
Right. Yeah. What happens if you fill out two of these for me? Yeah, nice, man.
Yeah. It's crazy. People just don't realize. I mean, like, Phil, how many search patterns have you done where you're just staring at and there's nothing going on and nothing going on? And it just trying to keep your mind, like, just trying to keep doing what you're doing and keep your mind engaged when there's nothing going on. It's almost probably harder than on a day where the ocean's angry and you know there's a rip, like, you know what to look at then. Like, that flat, calm day, it's hard to keep yourself engaged for, what, 12 hours in the stand.
Yeah, there's those days where it's, like, angry out, you know, and the ocean's just, you know, raging. I know as a guard, I never sat. Those days, I sit down, you know? Like, right. I wouldn't even turn on my music, you know? I would be on edge, ready to go. You know, ready, because I was always very proactive. I wasn't a guy that was like, well, I'm going to let them go near this rip.
Yeah, right. Let's see what happens. Yeah. No, hey, man, you were really professional, I think, dealing with that one dude, because I would have been like, hey, bro, you were closer than anyone. Why didn't you do something? You know, like,
it was flat calm, bro. You could have waited out.
Why don't we have a little ownership of our own actions here before we start calling out everybody else?
You know, I talked to the guard for a long time after that, and I was like, hey, man, don't worry about that guy. Yeah. You know, like, if he comes up towards you, because a lot of times that's another tough thing about being a guard in the stand. It's like, after something's done, you know, people want to come up to you and talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been plenty of situations where, like, we have to take a guard out of that stand, out of that location, put them somewhere else, just so they don't have to continue to talk about it.
Right.
You know? And I was like, hey, man, if this guy comes over to you, you let me know, because you did everything right. You know, like, and, you know, you never want to second guess yourself.
Yeah.
You know, never. Right. And I was telling him, I was like, you did everything right, man. Like, you can't blame yourself for the fact that guy might have seen it before you did, but that guy, that's all he saw. You know what I mean? Like, and he's feeling kind of guilty for not taking action himself.
Dude,
you know?
So, yeah, that's it right there, man. You're probably totally, you're on to something. Yeah.
So we had a situation down at Crew 6. Gosh, man, I forget what year it was, but I was a crew chief at the time. And it was during a boat show. So we had a, boat race. We had a boat race going on, like a high-speed boat race. So it's loud. You know, it's real loud. And there was three boys out on a sandbar, and a rip opens up on 30th Street. And longshore current kind of drifts them into the rip. They fall into the rip instantly, active drowning. Like, there's no, you know, step one. They go straight to step two, man.
Yeah.
They didn't have to swim. They instantly became active. The guard that was sitting on 30 and a half, so, like, we had stands positioned a little off the block, he saw it right away. And that year, he was the fastest swimmer on the beach patrol. You know, like, we keep track of everyone's, you know, research times and stuff. And he was a Division I swimmer from Virginia, you know, University of Virginia. He was in my crew. Dude was quick. And he took off, man. He was in that water. He was out towards them. But as he was swimming out towards them, two became three. Mm-hmm. No, I'm sorry. Three became two. And as he was swimming out, one head went down. So backup was coming. Everyone's going out. We pull two out. The third's still out there. You know, and we searched, and it was in the beginning of the year. That was probably in early June, so the ocean temperature was really cold. We had guys, we were rotating them out during our search and recovery. You know, they were going to the hospital for hypothermia because water temperature. It was rough, man. And that was probably the last time that I can remember on duty that we lost someone. That was like, you know, like that sucked.
You know? Do you guys, Jason, do you guys have boats of your own, or like it was something like that? Do you like call us? Do you call the Coast Guard in to search just offshore at the same time? Or
Anytime we have a search and recovery going on, DNR, Coast Guard, Trooper 4, even if you guys are in the area with a helicopter. You know, we'll have people circling. Yeah, absolutely. Everyone gets involved in that. Our local paramedics. A couple years back, we had a paramedic after duty go in and try to make a rescue, and he lost his life So since then, that's when we do the before ours and after ours. We do the 8-8 now. We started doing rescue swimmer training with some of our paramedics that feel like they're able and capable of doing so. We'll train them in some of our basic techniques and stuff. So yeah, it's a whole team effort, you know, and I would really like to see more cross training, you know, and moving forward. Like we talked about it a few times. It's hard to, you know, organize with different departments. But yeah, you know, I would really like to see more cross training, to be honest with you.
Do you guys still run dories? Do you run like the oar boats out?
Other beach patrols, you know, like Cape May. Cape May is like kind of
New Cape May's got one.
You know, for us, we have one boat. You know, while we row, strictly basically for competition.
Yeah.
Like you won't see.
Gotcha. Yeah.
We do have jet skis.
Yeah.
That's our. You know, we have probably four or five jet skis. We rotate them out every couple of years, just like our four wheelers. Mm-hmm. Jet skis. We have them on a. On a floating dock over the Coast Guard station.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
You know, the sergeant doesn't get to tow that thing behind, then you just launch it into the surf? Come on.
No. That's a long way, though. Like, you guys are all the way down basically at the inlet. That's a long way to get a jet ski somewhere, too.
Yeah. I mean, just same as Coast Guard, though. You know, same as DNR. Everything comes out of that inlet. So if you have a situation up on the north end of my area or even higher up in the north, like in the condos or beyond, it can take a while to get them up there if we're deploying from 0 to 100, you know?
Right.
But during the course of the day, we'll, you know, during July 4th weekend, we'll have 97 stands and 4 jet skis in the water.
Yeah.
And those are the coolest rescues.
Yeah, right. Are you guys running the sleds on all of them or? Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you'll have one guy that's, you know, he's scheduled to be on that jet ski that day. He has to go through his training. He has to get his, you know, his boater safety. And, you know, he has to have all that so that he can be certified to be on our jet skis. So it usually takes, like, until you're a second or third year guard to even be allowed to do that.
Yeah.
Right.
And then we do our own training. You know, we go in the inlet. We throw out basketballs. And you have to, like, you know, maneuver around them and pick them up. And, it's fun because, like, during, like, say, your workout break and you're one of those guards on a stand and you're out there working out and all of a sudden here comes a jet ski. You know, it's time for training.
Yeah,
you know
right? I mean? Yeah, right. Yeah. Give me a break.
And then that's when rescues happen.
Yep.
And, then, like, you'll have every 5 stands, you know, so that crew chief that sits in the middle of the crew, they have a radio. And, you know, if they hear rescue one, you know, hey, I'm around the 80th Street area and they see a rescue that could potentially happen or a long rip, a big rip that's opening up and it's, you know, 200 yards offshore or something. You know, we'll call rescue one or rescue two or whatever number's out there near you. And they'll hang out around that area. And yeah, they're looking for action for sure.
It's got to be a game changer having that jet ski, too.
I mean, you can't compare the speed, you know, to just someone. And that's another thing, like, you know, I talk about the complaints just like anywhere. I'm sure you get plenty of complaints. It's like you get 100%. More, you know, like the good stuff, you know, we call them out of the world, but, there's people in the water already, you know, like, they can paddle over. Like, our guards have to see it, leave the stand, run a quarter mile, then jump in the water. By the time we get to them, you know, so there are times where, you know, someone will be all upset. Well, I was able to get to him before the guard was. I'm like, yeah, well, you didn't have to run down the beach.
Brother. Yeah, right. You were get out of here, man.
You're 20 like, right, exactly.
Right.
So, you know, we have surfers too. Like when we have surf modified during the day, during a busy day or something like that, even some of our surfers. And that frustrates us because our surf community usually is very, very, very helpful. You know, in the fall when a lot of our guards are students or teachers and they're going back to school, you know, and our guards, you know, if you were 1.5 block to 2 blocks apart, now you're a quarter mile apart, now you're a half a mile apart. So as our numbers dwindle and our stands get further and further apart, you know, we try to always tell people, like, swim near the lifeguard. And then we'll modify surfing to let surfers get in between us.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing like having a surfer in between you that knows what's going on.
and allowing them to be able to paddle over and grab them for them on their board, because right. their boards are different from our paddle boards.
Right.
I prefer it, you know, but there are times where you get some surfers, they get that like local mentality. I'm a local, but actually they live up in Houston, Maryland or something.
Dude's drowning like next to him. And he's like, you can't paddle into my set or something. I can't, right. dude. What are you like? We're just going to take you out behind the tower after this. That's crazy.
I get so frustrated by the kids that, you know, they don't see the big picture, man.
Yeah.
Like some of the guys, we were those like, kids once.
Well, exactly, man. You know, it's just like some of our young guards. They get through their rookie year. You know, we call them beans. You know, after you get through your bean year, you know, all of a sudden you're a second-year guard. You think you've seen everything. You know,
right.
Yeah.
Well, hey, like man, that good question. So when you guys had that loss, right, and the lifeguard was out there, and you said three died.
There was three out there.
Only one went down. So how did you, you know, I don't know if it was a rookie guard or whatever, but I mean, I'm sure you guys had some kind of, you know, debrief about it or whatever. How do you help those guys like overcome a loss like that, right? Where I'm sure they're all reeling from it.
Yeah. And that was a big part of where we were going. I guess we kind of got sidetracked. Cool.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's, I think I mentioned it before. It's like, you just got to try to make sure that they know that they did everything that they could have done, and right. that, you know, like, as long as you can't second guess yourself, yep. you know, and you try to tell them, it's like, there's nothing you could have done different. Like, as long as you're confident that you did exactly what we've taught you, what we trained you, that's all you can do, yep. you know. And I told them, I was like, there's no way, man, that anything could have been different. There's nothing right. like, what? Well, maybe I could have saw him sooner. I was like, no, man. I was right beside you. Like, there's nothing you right. could have done different. You know, like,
Do you guys have, like a formal program? Because, like, we have a thing in the Coast Guard. We call it SISM, where, like, if something really traumatic happens, we lose one of our members or we lose somebody on a rescue. Like, we have a formal, like, program for that. Do you guys have something similar in the Beach Patrol or?
Yeah, well, our city jumps in. You know, okay. the town comes in and by all means, you know, they'll get psychologists and it's but he spoke with them for a while. We try to bring him back. What was really tough was the mom wouldn't leave, you know, that situation. The mom wouldn't leave the beach, so every single morning she was still there on the beach, so we had to move him to a different area for a little bit. And again, I mean, that's so rare, you know, that doesn't happen too often. Yeah, but when it does, it hits home, man. It hits home. It's just like our neck back situations. It's the same thing. It's like, it's so hard to prevent. You know, like there's people they just don't know. You know, it's like, I want to catch waves. And it's like they spend, you know, they save their money, you know, all year long to come to the beach for 1 week. And no one's thinking I'm going to break my neck and be paralyzed for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But, they just want to come down and catch waves, and the waves that day, they're breaking right on shore during high tide. And yeah, you got a small little 3-foot wave that's crashing on hard packed sand. It's like a wave crashing on concrete.
Right. You know, These aren't the waves you want to catch actually,
And you know, and what's crazy is like, we'll do beach safety seminar type stuff. Like if it's really bad and we had a bad shore break, we'll tell our guards, stand up, clear the water, bring them in. You know, get them all around your stand, you know, and talk to them and be like, hey, today's not the day, guys.
Like
we've already had, like, if you're listening to the radio, we've already had 2 or 3 flyouts. Like, we don't need this.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
You know? And then you can't prevent it. Here comes the new family coming off the boardwalk right now. You know, they didn't hear that message, you know, and, you know, like, one time I was guarding, and it was towards the end of the day. It was an ugly day. It was like a Friday evening, I think. And I saw a young couple that were like my age coming right off the end of the boardwalk at 27th Street.
You're not that young anymore, bro.
Well, man, he's harsh.
At that time. So we're talking like 10, 12 years ago.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay. So they're coming off the boardwalk, and
they dropped their bags at a spot, and the girl stayed back, and the guy just started sprinting, absolutely dead sprinting towards the water.
Right.
And it was one of those surreal moments where it was like things like it became slow motion. You know? And I remember standing up and whistling at him to yell stop at him from about a half a block away before he even jumped in the air. Because he had no clue, man.
Yeah,
he had no clue. Dead low tide. And this guy jumped off like it was a springboard. And I was down out of my stand sprinting to him as he was in the air because I knew what was about
right,
to happen.
You just see what was about to happen, right?
Yeah. And, he snapped his neck. I remember pulling him out. And, again, he was in inches of water. And
right.
It wasn't like I pulled him out of deep water. He was right there. So we did our shallow water extraction. I'm dragging him out, trying to keep his neck in line with his back. And we get him to dry sand. And the dude had a priapism, which is like number one sign. You know, like we knew that he cut his – we knew darn well that he cut his spinal cord because he had a male erection. You know, and,
right.
I threw the towel over to save his dignity, but I knew right then we call that in. To let paramedics know as they're coming, like, you need to come. You talk to the girlfriend later. They're like, we knew it was going to be a nice weekend. I forget where in Maryland they were from. They decided spur of the moment, let's head down. We'll get a hotel room for the night. They haven't seen the beach all summer. It was just,
right.
It was a terrible story, And
yeah.
It's stuff like that. You try to prevent, but there's times you just can't do it. You can't prevent those.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make it any easier, but it's going to happen. And that's actually, I know, kind of a segue, Jason. We talked a couple times on the phone before this. You were trying to tell me about a foundation you've gotten pretty involved with that talking about mental like strength and mental health and stuff like that. Because obviously this is one that affected you. And, the job we do, we've all seen some stuff that it gets to you after a while. What was the name of that foundation? You want to tell us about it a little bit?
Yeah, Down Our Way here in Maryland, in Worcester County, where we're at, Ocean City, Worcester County, there's a foundation called the Jesse Klump Foundation. Kim Klump was the mother of Jesse Klump. Jesse Klump committed suicide, years ago, and she's been really proactive about mental health and mental health issues. And I know that's been kind of a buzz, and I'm a school teacher, and in the schools, we're always doing these different exercises now for people's mental health. And I had a situation myself with my father a couple of years ago where he ended up taking his life.
Right.
It really has affected me over time with different lifeguards, as we've been talking about with some of these stories. It takes a toll. A lot of times it's like, well, you guys aren't in the military, you're not dealing with post-traumatic. And it's like, well, there's plenty of guys
for sure. There's no difference.
It's just a good network, to be able to have an opportunity to really speak out. And the Beach Patrol, our Beach Patrol is made up of mostly guys, and the stigma with men and mental health, a lot of times, like, guys don't want to talk about it.
And our job's the same way. I mean, our particular rate in the Coast Guard is overwhelmingly male, and same thing.
Right.
We're all tough guys, right?
Right. So, when I was going through a lot of tough times, I reached out and I found this group. It's been a positive, real positive, situation that it's been able to help me and just get me to open up, speak. And, sure. I've seen that it's been able to help a lot of others. Right now, we're really pushing statistically farmers. Farmers,
really?
Suicide rate's really high. So we're doing a big campaign. Like, a lot of, if you look at some of the advertising stuff for the Jesse Klump Foundation, you might find farmers. Worcester County. You get outside Ocean City, it's pretty rural. Right.
It is. Ocean City, it's like they plucked Daytona Beach and put it in the middle of Iowa. It's kind of what it is.
It's chicken farm country down here, man.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, it's something that it's, we're kind of taking advantage maybe of the fact that it's kind of a popular topic right now, but that's good.
Hey man, play your aces, bro. You know, right? Yeah. I mean, you got to play your aces. If it's time, you gotta get the help for sure.
Yeah, yeah. We'll put a link to that. I checked out their website. It looks like they do some really cool stuff. We'll be sure to put a link to that on the podcast. Phil handles all that.
Yeah, every Monday Matters EMM in the school I teach down here at Snow Hill High School when we were actually physically in the school. Right. Every other Monday, we were doing these Every Monday Matters. It's a pretty good little program as well. You know, just again, just taking care of your mental health. You know, it's just as important as physical. So, yeah, for sure.
I like the name of that anyway, man. Every Monday Matters. That's cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
That's, you know, people are always like, oh, case of the Mondays, whatever. Like, we all get cases of the Monday,
sucks.
Man. I hate Mondays, right? But Every Monday Matters, dude, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, man.
So, I'm sure you guys probably have something like it too, but it's like you try to make light of, you know, some of the tough situations that you might have been in, and you try to be able to. And that's why the Beach Patrol for me, it's such a camaraderie. Like the relationships that I've had over the years with some of my guys, like I'll never be able to replace that. Like some of my best friends, you know, now are, you know, members that I've been with for the last 20 years. Some of the rescues that I've been in with these guys, I mean, I'll never forget them. These are stories that, you know, you give back. You know, a lot of our younger guys, they're all roommates and stuff. So the story doesn't stop at 5:30. You know, they go back and they talk about it. And so we find out, you know, if it's, you know, something that they can kind of joke off, or, you know, if they're really affected by it.
Yeah, solid, for Jason, sure. Like, yeah, solid, man. Solid message. And I like, just know there's help out there, right? I think that's the big thing.
Absolutely.
And you're not always going to be able to make a difference, but like, you were there to try, right? At least you tried to make a difference for all those guys.
Yeah. And for sure, like those, like you were saying, the guys all going back and, you know, kind of trying to joke about it, but all, because everybody ends up living together or whatever. And people don't realize like that's worth so much, like, because you can't talk. I can't, stuff I've seen underway on a cutter, I can't tell my wife about, because she wouldn't have a clue. She just doesn't understand it. You if you're not talking to somebody who's done that, they don't understand what you're talking about. So having that support network's huge.
Yeah, that same guy that I was saying, he's been on the Beach Patrol for a really long time. It took him like 8 times in the beginning. Sergeant Ubel. Sergeant Ubel, he's a guy that anytime we have a search and recovery, we're like, go get Ubel, man, because he has a really good, I don't know what it is. He's like a metal detector.
Yeah, nice.
We'll pull him right up.
Very cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, well, Jason, bro, we so appreciate your time today, man. We really do. And thanks for being our canary in the coal mine, man. And if you if you ever want to come back, dude, and share some stories, or just want to get some stuff off your chest, you let us know, man, and we're here for you anytime.
We didn't even get into those.
Oh, I'm sure we didn't, bro. Yeah, so we'll get the good ones.
I had a porta potty fly by my head one time on the fourth floor.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. For sure. Hey, man. Thanks, Jason. I appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot, man.
Dude, we thank you, man, and let us know if we can ever do anything for you. We will throw up all the links and everything, dude. And if you ever want to come back on and talk about porta potties, you let me know, dude. Or let Bill know. All right, bro. Thanks, man.
Hey, brother. Good to talk to you, man. Tell Heather I said hello, please.
For sure.
Later, bro.
All right, man.
Later. See.
Thanks for taking the time to listen.
If you like what this podcast is about and what we delivered, look us up at theyhadtogooutcom or your favorite podcast platform. And like, comment, subscribe, and share so we can keep the momentum up and do bigger things going forward.
Look for a new episode every Sunday. Until then, fair winds and following seas.